There's no going back. A burn notice, Michael Victor / Vic, written by Bergen, read by Fearless Jones. Trusting your team is absolutely critical if you want to survive. You need to believe that they will correctly read your cues, that they'll risk their lives for you as much as you would for them, and to trust them to always have your back. A good team is a team whose success rests as much on the individual members as the leader. So Michael trusts that when he dumps the rolled-up sheets into the water on his way off the boat, standing still for a moment in front of the helicopter and the armed goons to watch it sink, Sam and Fiona see it and understand. None of the men make a move towards the boat once he gets off, and Michael's grin has entirely too much teeth to be friendly. "You're welcome," he tells them, and when one makes a move towards his file after patting him down, he tells them to fuck off, but so politely the words come out of his mouth, "No, this is for the big guy." Michael steps into the chopper with the same smile. He doesn't look back, doesn't look down, to check if the boat is being left alone. "Michael," Fiona says in surprise as he stumbles through the gate. "You're back!" Michael's also still dripping wet, which he thinks is why Fiona's hug isn't as tight as it otherwise might be. "Are you all right?" "Fine." He's exhausted after the swim, and soaking, and by now his location has probably been leaked to more than one person who wants him dead, but he could also already be dead. "How is he?" For a moment, Fiona doesn't answer, and Michael has a flash of worry that management's guys were more thorough in their search than he'd counted on, or that the bullet did more damage than he thought it did. "Victor's fine. He's resting in your bed after I had Campbell and his doctor friend come over with some supplies to help and remove the bullet. The doctor said Victor's lucky the bullet didn't do more damage than it did. You can find a way to properly thank me for calling Campbell later. Me and Sam weren't sure what else he wanted us to do with him, so we've left him alone. But Sam's keeping watch just in case he wakes up and gets any ideas." "Good," Michael says, and doesn't protest when Fiona hooks her arm around his waist to help him up the stairs. "Mikey!" Sam hugs him the minute Fiona helps him through the door. "You look... well, I don't really know what you look like, but you're alive, so the look is good on you anyway." And somehow, between Sam and Fee, he gets half-carried towards one of the kitchen chairs. Michael explains what happened on the boat and in the chopper, and tries to ignore the exhaustion for as long as he can until he catches himself zoning out on what Sam is saying about some friends who might be convinced to help. "I think I'll hit the sack for a couple of hours." "Where, Michael?" Fiona asks. "After all, you only have one bed, and that's taken." "My bed's a double, and Victor's passed out, and he's been shot," Michael points out. "I doubt it'll be a problem." "What about possible visitors who are hoping to find you drowned?" Sam asks, before Fiona can reply. "I don't think anyone is going to make a move for a couple of days, but be on alert just in case." "Of course, Mike." Sam nods, and once Michael's gone to change into something dry, adds softly to Fiona, "Maybe we'll have found Madeline before he wakes up, too." Michael wakes up a couple of hours after falling asleep to a steady pressure against his windpipe. He doesn't panic, because the press isn't threatening or serious. Just sort of curious, and he's not surprised to open his eyes to find out the hand pressing against his throat belongs to Victor. "You didn't shoot me," Victor says, once he notices Michael's eyes are open. He doesn't remove his hand. "You could have shot me, gotten out, yet here I am, alive, and in what looks to be your bed. Why?" "I don't like killing my allies," Michael says, and raises an eyebrow. "Want to remove your hand? I thought our relationship had moved past attempted murder." Apparently, our relationship has moved well past that, considering I woke up to your sleeping face. Although at the moment, I will have to ask that we postpone whatever other activities you had in mind until I no longer feel like a bullet made friendly with my insides. Victor remarks, but he removes his hand and settles back down on the bed with a pained hiss. So, what happened? I knocked you out, shoved you into one of the cupboards, and wrapped some items in your bedsheets to dump over the side so they wouldn't expect a body. Michael's grin is just a little bit smug and entirely wasted in the dark. Then I had a nice little chat about my position with the management and declined the offer. They let you live? They let me jump out of the helicopter at 90 feet and swim back to Miami, Michael corrects and adds. It was also implied they'd be handing out my information to some people who aren't exactly happy I'm alive. So what you're saying is that instead of accepting the management's offer of going to where the party is, you're bringing the party to us. Victor hums a little under his breath. I knew I liked you for a reason. Well, you're going to like me even more now, because I'm fairly certain I see your pain meds. Michael reaches for them on the table next to the bed. Now, say please. Victor's please is a vicious kick to Michael's ankle, but Michael hands them over anyway. The next time he wakes up, Victor is asleep again next to him, and the apartment is empty. He feels rested, although various muscles protest loudly that it's too soon to make a move. He ignores the ache, and when he comes back out of the bathroom, he sees Fiona leaning against the railing on the balcony. He grabs a shirt and a pair of pants, pulls them on quickly before he joins her. "Good morning, Michael," Fiona smiles at him over her shoulder. "How long?" "2 days." Fiona's eyes flicker down, and she raises an eyebrow. "They've been very peaceful. Are you wearing Victor's pants?" Michael glances down and notices that the pants he's pulled on are jeans and a little too tight. There are also bloodstains. Maybe a bit more out of it than he'd thought, but it's nothing that 2 days out cold can't explain. He looks back up and shrugs. "So anything happened?" "You think we'd have let you sleep if anything had?" Fiona laughs. "You'd have shot us yourself. No, nothing's happened. I've been buying some new toys, just in case. Sam's out talking to some friends, asking them to keep an eye out for anything big." "Good," Michael says. Even though he knows most of the attacks, the ones he should worry about will be silent until they reach Miami. Victor will probably want some things too, although his can wait until he can actually use them. Fiona turns to look at him curiously. "So, are you and Victor sleeping together?" Michael stares at her. "I only ask because you were planning to run off to Cuba together and his foot was hooked with yours when I walked past earlier. Not to mention you're wearing his clothes and talking like it's a definite thing that he'll stick around, even now that Carl is dead. I can piece clues together too, Michael." Michael raises an eyebrow and says, "Exactly where between Victor trying to kill me and him getting shot would we have found time to have sex?" Fiona shrugs. "I was merely asking, Michael. So what makes you so sure he's going to stick around?" Michael shrugs back. "I don't really see Victor settling down, nice and quiet anywhere, even with Carla dead." "No," Fiona sighs, turning around once again. "Spies never do." Michael stands for a minute, watching her, before he slips silently back into the apartment. "You know, Mike, I can't help but feel that we've got one too many cooks in the kitchen, if you get my drift," Sam says, eyeing Michael across the table to figure out how lightly he should tread. "I mean, it's great that we don't have to worry about him killing you so much anymore, but are you sure you can trust this guy?" "He hates these people as much as I do," Michael says, not pausing even though someone passes too close to the table. Pausing makes people suspicious. Pausing makes it look like you've got something to hide. Probably more. You're really saying we should send away an ally now, when old acquaintances with scores to settle start making Miami their number one destination? No, Sam draws the word out, not entirely honest with the answer. But we don't really know the guy. We haven't worked with him before. And after the jobs you and him did together, for Carla, you said he was a maniac. You, me, and Fiona, we can defend ourselves just fine. But with Victor, things will get a little bit more uncertain for us. Fiona won't trust him completely in a fight, and neither will I, Mike. We won't want to turn our backs, not completely. I'm just saying, in the situation we'll be finding ourselves in, maybe it's just better if he stays back until we're really sure he's needed, or prove that we can really trust him. Michael swallows what's left of his beer, already gesturing for another. It'll take another couple of weeks before Victor's healed enough to do anything but be a last-minute backup piece anyway. He doesn't jump to Victor's defense or ask Sam to give the guy a chance. The thought doesn't even really cross his mind. Sam seems to realize this and nods, eyes gliding away from Michael and after a woman who walks by, hips swaying. And Sam? Yeah, Mike? I never asked you to trust him, Michael points out. Because you don't really trust anyone until your entire team does, and you never trust a guy someone says, it's cool, you can trust him, about. The money lender Michael's meeting with goes down at the first shot, red soaking his shirt fast. Michael doesn't stick around, gun drawn from his jeans, and it's impossible to tell who fires the next couple of shots. Some hit the ground behind as he runs, as he ducks behind a car. He knows exactly where Sam, Fiona, and Victor are holed up, which makes it easier for a while, until the silence settles over the empty parking lot. Michael's not fooled, but there's movement from Fiona's position, and before he can shout for her to stay still, she steps out. There's a shot, and Fiona doesn't fall. She retreats right back into her position. "Got him," Victor announces cheerfully, a shot echoing around the room. And there's another shot from Victor's position before more silence. Him too. See anyone else? Michael asks, doing what should have been done before Fiona decided to move. Seems clear, Sam calls. Victor shouts. Think we got him. If I'd seen anyone earlier, I wouldn't have moved, Fiona says, and this time she waits until Michael steps forward. How's the moneylender? Sam asks. Coming over. Michael glances up and sees Victor and Fiona going over to the bodies of the shooters, checking. Dead, Michael answers, and Sam only nods, not surprised. It had been a risk they'd been expecting going in. The same reason they didn't ask Barry. Not to mention how Barry will owe Michael for getting rid of the biggest competition. They're all dead, Fiona announces as she and Victor approach. Your friend, too. Apparently, he wanted to see the job getting done, Victor says, his hand hovering a little over his stomach. The bullet wound is not fully healed yet, but it's healed enough for someone in their business to do a quick job. Enough for a guy like Victor to have started growing restless. We'll need to get out of here, Michael says unnecessarily, because there's no doubt that someone has heard the shots and called the cops. Back to the apartment. Me and Sam will get food. Guess that leaves you and me, Victor, Fiona says, but there's a smile in her voice. Maybe I can find some way to thank you for saving my life. She smiles brightly at the glare Michael sends her. Victor laughs as he follows her to their car. You know, Sam says, watching them go, I'd have thought you'd protest against that. What with you and Victor sharing a bed for the past couple of weeks and everything? Michael groans and heads for his own car, with only a warning. Sam. No, seriously, Mike, Sam insists, sliding into the passenger seat. You've had weeks and haven't bought a couch or a cot for him to sleep on. The two of you bicker like a couple when you're not flirting through threats of bodily harm. It's cute and something I'd never wish to see, but whatever makes you happy, Mike. Once they're back in the apartment, Chinese cartons in hand, Sam waits a total of 15 minutes before he says, "Glad to have you on board, Victor." Fiona nods as her chopsticks dig into the noodles. "You saved us a lot of back and forth with this trap." Sam and Fiona hadn't acted like Victor wasn't intruding on the team the past week, but it was still there in the things they didn't say, and while there's no real change in their tone or words, there's still enough of one. Victor hears it too and raises an eyebrow as he asks, "So that's it? I'm part of the magical Team Weston?" "Maybe," Michael says, not committing to it. But Sam claps Victor on the back and hands him another beer, grin wide and friendly, and Fiona lets him have the last roll. Victor looks up and smiles at him, knows just as well as Michael that he's in. He's part of the team now, and the flick of his eyes towards the bed isn't a promise or a suggestion. Not yet. The end. Trust the ground you stand on. A burn notice, Michael Victor / Vic, written by Bergen. Read by Fearless Jones. Their client is a young garage owner named Carrie Littlefield, someone who had heard about them through a long and complicated line of a friend of a friend, who had unknowingly started fixing cars for the wrong people. "Once I realized what they were using the cars I fixed for, I tried to tell them I didn't want their business anymore," Carrie says. "It's not like I do good even without them. I don't need their money to live. All the money they paid me, I put aside for the future, since I want to expand and hire some new mechanics." "Right," Michael interrupts, bringing them back on topic. "And you told them you wouldn't fix their cars anymore?" "Yeah," Carrie says, nodding her head. "I know I should have told the police, but I didn't want trouble and I don't have evidence. If they don't find any, Tinch'll know it was me, and when he gets released, I'll have a bullseye on my back. I just want out. So when Tinch's guys came in with their new cars, I told them to find another garage. I wouldn't have any of my mechanics fixing their cars." "I take it didn't go well." "They took my youngest mechanic and told me they'd kill her if I didn't fix their car." Carrie's hands curled into fists. "I got all of us working on the cars at once to get her back as fast as possible. My mechanics and me were like family, so no one's quit yet. They didn't hurt her, but what about next time? They won't stick around if it keeps happening. My business will be ruined. I don't know what exactly it is you do. All my friend said was that you could help me. But if you could just get me something to ensure he can't walk away after..." Michael glances at Victor, Sam, and Fiona. At their nods, he turns to Carrie and smiles. "Carrie, I think we can help." "So, from what I can find out," Sam says, as he gets a beer out of Michael's fridge, "Tinch works mainly out of the club Pinch. He's got a few other clubs in the area that he goes to, but Pinch seems to be the main place of operation. Visits to the others look to be more pleasurable in nature." "Pinch?" Fiona asks. "As in the hottest gay club in town?" "That's the one," Sam confirms. "Turns out Tinch is the owner." "Well," Fiona says brightly, reaching for her purse. "Looks like you're on your own with this one, boys. Now, I've got a date." "Hold on, Fee," Michael says, and looks back at Sam. "The other clubs he went to. Gay bars?" "No, our man Tinch seems to like the ladies," Sam says. "Sometimes too much. He got thrown out of two clubs for getting a little bit too handsy, against the ladies' wishes." "Fee, I want you to..." "I got it, Michael," Fiona says. "Catch his interest and keep him away from the office, oh, say, Friday?" "Friday would be good, Fee." Michael nods. "Well, I guess I have to go cancel my date tonight," Fiona sighs. fishing her cell phone out of her purse. "Hi, Harry. This is Fiona. Listen, my brother." Once Fiona's outside, Michael continues. "And while Tinch is with V, I'll see if there's anything in his office we can use to build a case." "We," Victor corrects absently, not looking up from the magazine he'd been reading. From where Michael's sitting, it looks like the specs for a new gun. "You're not going in alone." "No," Michael says, and now Victor does look up. "Right," Sam says slowly, finishing off his beer. "I'll go call some friends, see if there's anything else to learn before you two go barging into the office." "No," Michael says firmly. "I'm going in alone." "Play nice now, children." The door closing sounds suddenly very loud in the silence. Victor narrows his eyes. "I'm sorry, Michael. You must have misunderstood when I said, 'You're not going in alone.' Let me rephrase it for you. I am coming with you." "No," Michael repeats. "On the off chance I get made, we need a face they won't recognize later on. That's you. You are not coming with." "You won't get made at all if I come," Victor says. "I'm part of the team now, Michael, remember? Teams trust the individual members. Sam's doing his thing, Fiona's being a distraction, and we'll have a better chance of success if you let me come with." "No," Michael repeats. "You're still injured. It'd be a risk." Victor had been healing fine, until one mark turned out to have more goons than they'd thought, and one managed to land in a couple of stomach kicks to Victor before Sam and Michael could get to him. "Really, Michael, you should know a little setback injury like this doesn't stop me from being able to do a small B&E with a partner." Victor smiles, the smile Michael's pretty sure has no other meaning than to fuck with him. "Carla made me read up on you. You'd be insisting on going in alone as soon as you could walk again, and I've been walking for a week now. Don't be hypocritical, Michael. It's not flattering on anyone." Fiona sticks her head back in before Michael can reply. "Sam's got a call from Carrie. Apparently Tinch's men called ahead this time. They've got a new car that needs fixing." "Time for work," Victor says brightly, and is out the door before Michael can do something stupid like ask him to wait. Victor is in mechanic overalls in the front seat of a Jaguar XR, with Carrie leaning over the engine, when Tinch's men roll into the garage in a Chrysler 300C. Michael and Sam are on the other side of the road, watching as the Chrysler blocks Victor from view. "You sure this is a good idea, letting Victor be the one in there?" Sam asks. "Because he's part of the team all right, but Mikey, the guy's not exactly predictable." "He won't jeopardize us," Michael says. "You know as well as I do, he's only crazy if it doesn't matter." The microphone in the garage starts picking up noises that isn't the sound of Carrie and Victor working on the Jag. "You're still here," one of the guys, stepping up from the Chrysler, says. "Good. Our boss was afraid you'd run." "I am not letting Tinch ruin my business," Carrie says, and there's the sound of the hood being closed. "I've got other people expecting their car to be fixed." "Well, today you've only got Tinch to focus on," a new voice says. "Other customers can wait until tomorrow." "No," Carrie says. "You can't just keep coming in here expecting for me to put my business on hold. Tinch, he's supposed to be rich. Can't he just hire his own mechanics?" "He's hired you, Littlefield," the first voice says, and there's the sound of a gun being cocked. "Now, since you seem to be short-staffed today, we're not taking anyone. But if either of you reach for a cell phone or do anything to this car that isn't what we ask, and we'll shoot your little helper here." Victor squeaks. If Michael didn't know him better, he'd think the guy was actually terrified. Fine, Carrie says, after a few tense moments. Don't shoot him. He's the only one who showed up to work after your last visit. I will be backlogged for weeks, quick, if I'm the only one left. Just get to work, the second voice says, and another gun is cocked. The faster the car is fixed, the sooner you'll be able to return to your other customers, lady. Come on, Mark, Carrie says. Let's get to work. I'm not real comfortable with guns, Victor says slowly. And there's a clang as he, Michael assumes, drops something on the floor. They make me really nervous. Get over it, the first guy says. You fix the car and you'll have nothing to worry about. Just focus on the car, Mark, Carrie says. Idiots don't deserve to be acknowledged, especially if they're idiots with guns. That Carrie, Sam says slowly. She's really something, isn't she? Yeah, Michael agrees. Let's not go there, Sam. Michael orders bourbon on the rocks once he manages to find his way to the bar in the overcrowded club. That's on me, a voice to his right tells the bartender, and Michael closes his eyes briefly. He knows that voice. I'm Daniel, Victor says, and smiles smugly as he holds his hand out. Hi. William, Michael says, squeezing Victor's hand harder than necessary, as he draws Victor slightly closer and lowers his voice. What are you doing here? I told you not to follow me, Daniel. I didn't. I've been here for an hour, Victor says cheerfully and sips his drink. It's pink. I'm doing you a favor here, William. You're not getting into the office without me. Michael smiles as the bartender returns, shifting closer to Victor to make room for a guy covered in enough glitter to leave a trail around the room. What do you mean? Tinch's office is at the end of a corridor lined with rooms used for more pleasure than business. Victor touches Michael's elbow and smiles. You'll be suspicious going in alone. And if someone catches us? William, in these pants, no one is going to even look at my face. Victor slips his hand past Michael's elbow to his waist. Place yourself strategically, and no one will look at yours either. Now, can I call you Will? If you want to sleep on the floor, Michael says, placing his hand on top of Victor's and sliding it up his arm, and grins with all his teeth. Go right ahead. Victor laughs, the same laugh he uses when they're handling explosives, and downs the rest of his drink. Find anything? Michael asks, once he's done looking through the drawers and file cabinets. Well, Victor says, drawing the word out. I haven't done this as often as you, so I'm no expert, but to me, this monthly bill he's paying a storage facility on the other side of town might be worth checking into. From the amount of cash he's putting into it, I'd say he needs to hide something pretty big. Get the address and log out so we can get out of here, Michael says. I found nothing. Guess I'm a bit useful after all, huh? Victor grins. Now, I want you to say, thank you, shut up for a second, Michael hisses and listens. I think someone's coming. The room goes suddenly dark without the light from the computer, but Michael can hear Victor's steps as he moves out from behind it, and the two footsteps coming towards them, probably the guards from the door to the corridor. Then Victor's got one hand on Michael's waist and one on his chest, pushing him onto the desk. Fuck, Michael swears, not just because the move took him completely by surprise, but because he has a stapler digging into his back. Vic! I've been wanting to do this for a while now, Victor says conversationally. Under different circumstances, of course, but I think the fact that it's about to save our lives will add a little something. The kiss is not gentle, or hesitant, or anything like that. But considering the two people involved, considering it is Victor kissing him, Michael's not really that surprised. What is surprising is that Michael doesn't push him away. Not just because he gets the plan, but because he's been waiting for this for a while now. They both have. So he leans up into it, giving as good as he gets. Victor growls out something. Can't just be acting, Michael thinks, as Victor uses the hand still on his chest to push him harder onto the desk, using his hips to pin Michael completely. The stapler is still digging into Michael's back, but the feeling is being drowned out as Michael's brain processes, instead, Victor's body pressed against his, Victor's tongue in his mouth. Michael reaches down with one hand, squeezes Victor's ass hard. Not just because he wants to, but in warning that the security guys are probably going to open the door any second. Victor laughs into his mouth, the same laugh from earlier, the one that makes him sound dangerous and insane, and moves his head down to Michael's neck, biting hard. The loud gasp is entirely unintentional, but it coincides nicely with the door being shoved open, so Victor doesn't need to know that. "Hey, you're not supposed to be in here," one of the guards shouts, and a hand lands on Victor's shoulder, hard enough to press him agonizingly closer to Michael for a moment before he's wrenched back. "Fuck," Victor says. "Easy, man. What do you mind? This is what the rooms in this corridor are used for, isn't it? 'Cause that's what my friend told me, and it sure beats the bathrooms. That's so unsanitary, you know?" "Shut up." The other guard grabs hold of Michael and scowls at both of them. "This room is not like the others. It's supposed to be locked. How'd you get in?" "We turn the handle," Michael says, but doesn't take his eyes off Victor, who's looking back and grinning. "We sure didn't use any kind of key. How are we supposed to know we're not allowed to use the room if it's not locked? It's not like anyone told us not to, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who get off a little more on the office look of it." "Jesus, Frank," the security guard holding onto Victor says. "Maybe the boss just forgot to lock up. It's happened before. These two don't look like they'd be doing anything but each other." "All right," Frank says. "Just IDs, in case the boss wants to have a word with you." Michael scowls, but hands the ID over, and Victor does the same, at the same time wrenching out of his security guard's grasp and stepping closer to Michael. "Daniel Wagner and William Marshall," Frank reads, letting go of Michael. He hesitates for a second once he's released, before he steps further into Victor's space and puts his arm around his waist. "Can we go now? We were kind of in the middle of something." "Jesus Christ," Frank says, handing the IDs back over. "Go on, go." Michael turns his head, bites once on Victor's earlobe, and goes. "I need a beer," Michael decides, once they walk through the door, to find Sam and Fiona sitting on the kitchen chairs. "Good idea," Victor agrees. "Get me one too, won't you?" Fiona raises an eyebrow at him as he walks past her, which he pretends not to see. "Sam," he says, instead, once he's opened the refrigerator, "why are there suddenly 4 Tupperware containers in here?" "Oh, right," Sam nods. "Your mom stopped by while you were out. She said you hadn't been by recently and were avoiding her calls." "I'm not," Michael says, and actually means it. "Mostly. His mom just calls at bad moments." "Right. So I told her you were out with Victor and wouldn't be back for a while, and she asked why there was only one bed in the apartment and left." Sam lists them off, and Michael can tell without looking at them he's trying hard not to laugh. "Oh, and we're all invited for dinner on Sunday." "Sam..." "What, Mikey? I couldn't say no," Sam says. "Besides, we're close to finished, aren't we? What did you find?" "Storage facility he's using downtown," Michael says, and hands a beer over to Victor. "We'll go in the morning." "Fiona, how was your date?" Victor asks, taking a long swallow from his bottle. Michael doesn't watch. "He's a pig," Fiona huffs, "but enough of one that my slap was justified. I don't think he's expecting my call again." "Fiona, you slapped him. What if we need a new distraction?" "Then you can date him, Michael," Fiona huffs. "There are lines." All right, Michael gives. Luckily, it looks like the storage facility might be what we need. There didn't seem to be much of anything else in the office. You sure he doesn't have another office anywhere, Sam? "Yeah, Mikey, I'm sure." Sam nods. "All my sources say the same thing. He operates at a pinch." "Tomorrow, then," Fiona says, and gets to her feet. "I don't know about you guys, but I'm exhausted." Sam and Fiona both head for the door, but Fiona just stops, short of the door, and turns around. "Oh, and by the way, Michael, you've got a little something on your neck." She taps the side of her neck with a wink and slips out. Michael's hand goes up to his neck, the same spot Fiona had tapped, and the same place Victor had bit him earlier. Victor grins. "What can I say? I'm a biter." The storage room Tinch is paying for has no other security than the cameras. It makes sense. In a storage facility like this, guards would stand out. No doubt Tinch is the only one who knows it even exists. "So, dinner with the parents tomorrow, huh?" Victor says, while they're waiting for Sam to show up. "You've already met my mother, and yes," Michael replies. "Apparently we're all invited. It'll go fine." "I haven't met her after she's implied things about her sleeping arrangements," Victor says, and turns his head to watch as Sam pulls up. "But then again, I'm surprised no one's brought it up until now." "Not with you," Michael corrects, and smiles at Sam. "How's it going, Sam?" "Fiona forgot to mention she slipped a slow-working sedative into his drink last night," Sam replies as they start heading for the storage room. "So Tinch won't show up for a bit." "Good. We might need time depending on what's in there," Michael says as he shakes out the lock picks. The lock is advanced, but with Victor and Sam blocking the view from the camera nicely, it slides open in no time at all. Sam and Victor both whistle at the contents of the room. "Wow," Victor says. "I knew we were expecting stolen goods, but nothing like this." The room is lined from floor to ceiling with paintings, statues, jewelry boxes, basically everything that makes thieves happy. "Don't take anything," Michael reminds unnecessarily and tosses a camera to Sam. "Take photographs of as many of the individual items as you can. We're leaving in a minute." While Sam goes around taking pictures, Michael keeps an eye on the road, and Victor looks, but doesn't touch. "Time's up," Victor says, appearing at Michael's elbow, and Sam pockets the camera before they pull the door closed, lock it, and walk calmly back to the cars. "I'll make sure to drop this in a patrol car," Sam says, patting his pocket. "When you do," Michael says, bringing out a folded-up piece of paper and handing it over, "make sure this is with it." Sam opens it and arches his eyebrows. "Mikey, this looks like a list of houses in some very rich neighborhoods." "Yeah, I did a little digging," Victor says. "Turns out, 2 days after the cars stopped by the garage, some very rich people were suddenly without some very nice possessions." "Well, if this doesn't get some guy arrested, nothing will," Sam says, and carefully pockets the paper with the camera. "Oh, and Sam," Michael adds, "make sure they prioritize it. Maybe shoot out one of the tires." Sam grins. "Will do, Mikey, will do." Once Sam's gone, Michael tosses the car keys to Victor and slides into the passenger seat. Victor keys the ignition and looks sideways at him. Now what? Want to go buy me a bed since the situation has been brought up? Michael looks back at him. Nah, he says, leaning comfortably back in his seat. I'd rather go play some chess. The end. Depend on the Team. A Burn Notice Michael Victor / fanfic. Written by Bergen. Read by Fearless Jones. There are some situations you can't control. Sometimes, you just have to trust that a member of your team will get there in time. Or, alternately, that a member of your team is not stupid enough to risk everything just to get you out of danger. This is the sort of situation that Michael had hoped would belong to the latter. There's no time for a rescue mission if they want to get to the client's sister before the bad guys do. Their client this time is Mark Howard. Mark is a pharmaceutical scientist, a position he was happy with right up until a Mexican drug lord, known only as Sacha, had demanded Mark give him a highly experimental drug and had been refused. As a result, Mark's sister Joy had gone missing, and Mark had gone to Michael for help. Michael's plan had not involved getting himself captured and bound, but you can't plan for everything, and Michael really hadn't expected Sacha's barely legal wife to be at the hotel when he'd gone to deal with Sacha. He also hadn't been expecting the martial arts training. Start at the beginning. It's important for your team to possess several skills in different areas, so that if someone turns out to be a bad choice for a job, there's someone else who could step in and take their place. Yeah, I think we're going to have to let Fee do this part of the job, Michael says in the awkward silence after Victor's done talking. Your accent could use more work, and we don't have time. We could have had months and it wouldn't be enough for him to go in front of Mexican drug lords and be convincingly Hispanic, Sam says to his empty beer bottle, voice pitched low, and then gives Victor a quick glance to make sure he didn't hear. Michael raises his eyebrows, and Sam's expression pretty clearly conveys, well, it's true. It wasn't that bad, Victor says, and actually sounds kind of confused about it. No one said anything before. Victor, my pal, you've been lied to, Sam says louder, and pats him on the shoulder as he moves past Victor to get another beer. It's pretty bad, Fiona agrees, with what's probably supposed to be an apologetic smile, but just comes across as smug. You sound like you should be in an episode of Explosión Gigantesca de Romance. At their blank looks, she sighs and adds, It's a Spanish soap opera from Santa Barbara, never mind. Why are you watching Spanish soap operas? Sam asks curiously. I mean, soap operas are bad enough, why watch them in Spanish? Because, Sam, there hasn't been much to do, and it's not that long since one of their actors was actually killed during his murder scene. Fiona sighs. And it's very addictive. I caught a few episodes while we were waiting for Michael to wake up after that explosion in that snobbish drug dealer's apartment went wrong, remember? It's fun. Fun, Sam repeats with disbelief. You actually consider a show without any explosions or gunplay fun. I have deaths, Fiona protests. I can like something without it having weapons in it. Not that a gun and some C4 wouldn't solve a few problems, but it's not as though I'm looking for anything with real substance to it in the afternoons anyway. We need some place to stash the dinero, Victor says experimentally, with a slight adjustment to his earlier accent, and the cringes are barely perceptible, but definitely there. Yeah, let's leave this to Fee, Michael says, and rubs small circles on Victor's spine, out of sight from Sam and Fiona. On the bright side, this leaves you in charge of explosives and firepower. Well, Victor says, and there's something in his voice that makes Michael slightly suspicious. That I definitely know how to do. Fiona hums critically. You're not bad. You'll be calling me excellent soon enough, I have an idea. Oh? Michael asks, arching eyebrows. Why don't you share?
I'll share tomorrow, Victor says. I can't guarantee anything today.
Victor, Michael, if I thought you knowing would help the matter at all, I'd tell you. But why make your plans depend on mine?
No, seriously, Fiona, you watch Spanish soap operas? Sam asks, in the sudden silence. But his laugh is only a tiny bit faked.
Who's your favorite?
It's only the one, Sam, and...
You planned to get this entire thing, too, didn't you? Michael whispers, while Sam and Fiona argue on.
Victor gives him a wide-eyed, who, me, look.
Planned what?
Michael rolls his eyes and doesn't answer, but he can't help the small smile tugging at the corner of his mouth. The bar Victor leads him to the next day is a dive. Even considering the neighborhood, the bar is in pretty damn bad shape.
There's someone in here that can help us?
It's not exactly a question, just a statement of disbelief. It's important to keep an open mind and be ready for anything, but this kind of place, you usually only get one kind of people, and it's exactly the kind of people Michael tries not to know.
Definitely, Victor says, as he subtly searches through the dark corners for whoever they're here to see.
Although I wouldn't drink anything you order.
I have been in worse places than this, Michael points out, amusement curving his lips up ever so slightly.
In appearance, yes, Victor agrees. But even the water here would have you sick for days, and we don't have time. We can always return after we're done if you feel like you need to prove yourself. Now, come on, I found our guy.
They move further into the bar, and eventually Michael can make out the man Victor is heading towards. The man looks very much like a long nap is in order, not to mention a shower.
Hank, my man, Victor greets, knuckles tapping briefly against the tabletop. I hear you've moved up since we last talked.
Hank's grin is a lot more wary than Victor's.
Could be, he says, and his eyes sweep quickly over Michael. Who's your friend?
This is Mikey, Victor says. He's new. Don't mind him. He's just going to sit here and look pretty.
Hank looks uncomfortable. Michael grins, all teeth, and kicks Victor's shin under the table hard enough to bruise. He barely flinches.
So what do you want this time, Vic?
I hear you've gotten in with the new arms dealer in town, Victor says, his grin taking on just a tiny bit of edge. We need an introduction.
I can do that, Hank nods. If you do one thing for me first.
Of course, Michael says, and gives Victor a look. Tell me why you want in.
I am the new arms dealer in town, Hank says, and his grin is no longer friendly. If you're going to do anything with or to my operation, I want to know, and don't lie.
You're the new head honcho? Victor asks, and whistles. His hand comes down on Michael's thigh and squeezes.
Relax.
Really? Congratulations, Hank. Knew you had it in you.
Hank's lips quirk slightly before his face goes blank again.
Tell me, Victor.
There are some big-shot Mexicans in town. You have a shipment to deliver to them. We want to be the ones to deliver them.
Why?
Because those Mexicans are drug lords who are holding a 16-year-old girl hostage, Victor says. You have a daughter that age, don't you?
Hank's jaw twitches.
I do. I can stop the shipment.
No, Michael says. Don't. If they think anything is out of the ordinary, they will kill her. The only way we can get her back safe is by going through with the shipment. Just leave it to us.
Hank raises an eyebrow. How do you plan to do all this?
Michael thinks of how Fiona is currently getting a Mexican drug lord to buy her drinks, while Sam places bugs on their cars, and says,
Need to know.
Victor smiles.
Like you said, leave it to us.
The shipment contains the newest military guns available.
We can't let this leave the country, Michael says,
mostly to Sam, since Fiona and Victor are too busy cooing over the weapons.
What do you want us to do, Mike? We call the police in and the hostage dies.
They're going to check the weapons for any eventual bugs.
I know, Sam, but we let these people leave the country with crates filled with military-grade weapons, then...
It's not worth the life of one girl, Victor says, looking up. What if we put a bug on the guys picking the shipment up?
You can pull that off without the person noticing you're planting a bug on them?
Sure, Victor says. I'm a very believable guy.
He pulls it off.
They split it up. Michael goes to keep Sacha distracted. Victor goes to deal with the weapons, while Sam and Fiona make sure that Mark doesn't do anything stupid, like hand over the experimental drugs. They were supposed to meet back at the loft within the hour. When Michael comes to and finds himself bound to a chair in an empty room, he can't help but think that he might not make it. It's clear he's been moved, and by the look of things, to an empty office building. There are several empty office buildings in Miami. From the initial assessment, things don't look good. It's hard to tell how long he's been unconscious, but it's definitely longer than he thought, because it isn't long until Victor comes bursting through the door, only a few moments after there has been gunfire outside.
Hello, Michael.
Victor smiles before turning his attention to the bomb he brings out of the bag he's brought with him. Michael tries to say, "What the hell are you doing?" but it doesn't make it past the duct tape covering his mouth.
Hello, Michael. Victor smiles before turning his attention to something currently strapped to the chair Michael's sitting on. "Did you know there's a bomb under your chair?"
Michael didn't know, and tries to say, "Untie me or run," but doesn't make it past the duct tape covering his mouth. Victor seems to understand the muffled noise, though, and brings out a knife from his shoe.
"I kinda like you like this, bound and silent, so many possibilities."
He grins and fake shivers with delight.
These guys must be good if they manage to tie up the great Michael Weston like this.
Michael would appreciate the backhanded compliment more if he hadn't just recently discovered he's currently strapped to a bomb. He narrows his eyes at Victor and jerks his head to the side in a hurry-up gesture. Victor smirks, but does start cutting the cable ties on Michael's feet before walking around to cut loose his hands. Michael rips the duct tape off his mouth himself.
"I wanted to do that," Victor pouts.
"You could have waited."
"There's a bomb."
"Relax, Michael," Victor says, and crouches back down in front of the chair.
"Whoever built this isn't as good with explosives as he is with cable ties. I can disarm this in the minute left."
"How'd you find me?"
"I put a GPS tracker in your phone," Victor says absently.
"I was a little hurt you threw away your old one, but understandable considering you couldn't be sure I wasn't the only one who had an eye on your movements."
"Which I was. When you didn't show up, I told Sam and Fiona to go on ahead and rescue Joy. I borrowed a car and came to rescue you."
"You're tracking me?"
"Only when needed," Victor says, "or if I'm particularly bored."
"Oh, huh."
"Huh?" Michael repeats, taking a step forward and letting the subject drop for now.
"I might have underestimated them," Victor admits, and edges back from the bomb.
36 seconds. Race you."
Michael's already out the door. On the other side of town, Sam and Fiona are driving Joy Howard's to safety. The end.